All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
A full studio for our final well-educated, homework done bumper preview of the 2025-2026 Premier League season. Mick as producer and I as a mere presenter will have nothing on the predictions of our two wise men here to my left and our chief Premier League commentators of Nathan Murphy and Stephen Doyle. So no pressure, folks, to gaze into your crystal ball and give us the correct answers.
Thanks for the big build-up, Owen.
No, a pleasure. What we're going to do here is we're going to go through six different categories. At the end, we'll do our top five in order and our bottom three, as you might expect. And then we're going to do four questions before that, which include best signing, surprise package, first manager sacked, and maddest prediction. I'm saying this now for the first time. We may not clip anything from the maddest prediction thing, just to give give us a sense of comfort that we can say whatever we want, and sort of amnesty in whatever we want to predict, that we won't be held hostage to the fortunes of social media, if that would be okay, maybe. I'm saying that. Now, let's see what you actually say. First of all, lads, buzzing for the season. You're on commentary duty for Arsenal versus Manchester United versus Arsenal this Sunday, Nathan.
Yes, cannot wait. Yeah, I'm incredibly excited, and I don't think I've ever been as unsure of what's actually going to happen this season.
Mm-hmm. And Steve-O, you're on Keith Andrews' first game on Sunday.
Oh yeah, can't wait for that one. And alongside Brian Kerr as well, of course. Always great to see Brian Kerr after your summer holidays. And I say summer holidays, I haven't even had my holidays yet.
That's anyways, right.
Yeah, do you know something? There's something, this Premier League season feels really fresh or something. There seems to be a lot of change that's happened. Everton have a new stadium, Thomas Frank at Tottenham. There just seems to be a kind of general feel of newness about this Premier League season, and we also don't have that kind of coming off the back of a summer tournament. Well, not an international summer tournament anyway.
Not a men's summer tournament, yeah.
Yeah.
Or a men's international summer tournament, exactly. You got to get all categories of that correct.
But none of the players that are playing in the Premier League this season will have, you know, played in an international tournament this season. So yeah, it just feels kind of fresh, rejuvenated, all that kind of stuff. So really looking forward to it.
You buzzing, Mick?
Yeah, I am. Only in the last week or so. I really enjoyed the break from Premier League football, from like English club football. I think it was needed, actually. It just felt like there was eternal seasons that haven't stopped since COVID. But yeah, it's a refreshed feeling, ready to go. Kind of trying to catch up with, like, teams are very different, aren't they?
Yeah.
You look at, you know, you kind of see all the transfers as they happen. But then you get to like the week of the season and you look at them all, you look at the squads and you're like, whoa, like, you know, just Chelsea with another transformed team. I can't believe it. Man City, like all the top, every single one of like Man United, all the big six, let's say, rather than the top six, other than maybe Spurs, have all like transformed their squad.
Yeah, there's been a cumulative effect of all these little tidbits of news over the course of the season, which has transformed so many squads. And we will start on that point. Best signing, who do you predict to be the best signing at the end of 2025-26? Nathan?
Florian Wirtz.
Okay.
Does it have to be qualified by how much money you're spending?
Yes, of course, definitely. So Wirtz has to be sensational this season to be considered the best
signing. But he has to be player of the season.
Or close to it, yeah.
I think he's the most exciting signing of the close season. He may not end up being the most expensive, but I think there's probably going to be less question marks about him, even in a way than there will be about Alexander Isak, who, to justify everything that's going on, will, you know, have to somehow score 25, 30 goals.
Why is everybody so sure of Wirtz? And that's not a question to diminish it. I'm absolutely on board. I haven't watched Wirtz play week in, week out, but there is this general, it's beyond an assumption that this money is absolutely well spent. He is going to be a hit for Liverpool. Why is everybody so sure?
I think there's obviously a good body of work there from his time in Germany. And look, I'm the same as you. I wasn't watching him week in, week out. And then you watch the Community Shield and you see a little bit more of him. And even watching him at times internationally, I think his ability to get on the ball and his want to get on the ball all of the time feels very different from what the Liverpool midfield has been about. And I think it part of the excitement, him on his own, may not be as exciting as the entire transformation of where he's going to fit into what Liverpool are trying to do. Like, it's almost unprecedented, certainly in modern times, for a club to have this level of upheaval, having had such a successful season. And Wirtz feels like he's the key man in that. As much as Isak could be important, and it could particularly be important, I think if Wirtz clicks, and if he's as instrumental in transforming Liverpool's midfield and makes them a far more possession-based team high up the pitch, I could easily see him ending up as the Footballer of the Year if Liverpool go and win the league. But it does come with a massive risk of transforming that midfield from last year, in all likelihood dropping at least one of them. Luis Diaz, who was Liverpool's best player in the opening months of the season, who you could always, it was almost this sense when he was leaving of it was a good deal for everybody, they made a decent profit, they got some really good years out of him, and that was he ever going to progress to being the best in the league in his position? Well, at times he wasn't far off it, particularly when he was out on the left-hand side. So, yeah, I think Wirtz is maybe the obvious answer. People will come up with better answers, I'm sure, than that. But if Liverpool win the league, I think he'll probably end up being the player of the season.
Have you come up with a better answer than that, Stephen Doyle?
I mentioned someone to you in a chat we had a few weeks ago, on, I think, João Pedro going to Chelsea. I think in the market at the moment in which we see strikers going for massive fees, like 80, 90, 100 million euro, I think 63.7 million euro, I think it works out as, from, you know, change, converting it from sterling. Like, he's made 70 appearances for Brighton, scored 30 goals, 10 assists. He can score with his head, he can score with his feet. I think he had, like, I think what one of Chelsea's problems last season was they created so many chances. Like, they created, what was it, 454 chances, I have it down there, as that was only third behind Liverpool and Manchester City. That's a massive amount. At Brighton, they created 374, so it's nearly 100 less. And he still managed to score 10 goals last season in the Premier League, and that's despite missing 11 matches. He was injured for 8, red card suspension for 3. Like, 10 goals in what, 28 games is pretty impressive in a team like Brighton that's well down the table.
He wasn't always the leading man there as well, because exactly, of the way they played, yeah, with Welbeck and everything like that. He played deeper than he probably will at Chelsea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he is going in there to spearhead that Chelsea attack.
He did have a worse season last year than the previous year, though, in terms of pure raw goal scoring. So, yeah, overall 10 goals in all comps last year, 20 goals in all comps the previous year, played 10 more games the previous year, but
not much difference in terms of Premier League goals. He's going to be one of the more interesting signings because of what you're saying. I went to see Brighton a lot last season, and yeah, God, they were frustrating at times. And look, I was probably looking at it certainly for the first few months through an Evan Ferguson lens, but their build up play was so slow, and he just looked on a different level to everybody else on the pitch, but they never got him the ball often enough, and he always got it a little bit too deep because Welbeck was the advanced man. My question around him will be, like, where does Liam Delap fit into this? And is he going to get that run of, which you'd have to think strikers need, of, you're my man.
And what's the answer to that question?
You're allowed to have a bad game, João Pedro, and we won't take you off after 55 minutes because Liam Delap is sitting there and he brings something different, and it doesn't mean you're not going to be starting next week. So is he going to start, yeah, is he going to start 32 games for Chelsea?
The thing with Delap, though, is he's not an out-and-out goal scorer. You know, he's kind of, he's muscle, he's strength, he's somebody who will maybe, you know, create space for other players in the box. Like, you know, João Pedro, like, even last season, he scored against Man United, he scored against Arsenal in two games, he scored against Manchester United.
Can't be given as a credit anymore.
Know, but I mean, as in games where you're going in under big pressure to play against a bigger club, and I do take your point, obviously, about United and all that. Scored against Paris Saint-Germain, the Club World Cup final. So, like, this fella can play under pressure. He can play pressure games. He's also Brazilian, and he's only got 3 Brazil caps. He missed most of the qualification of the last qualification series because he was injured for a good few games. He's going to be absolutely hell-bent to get into that Brazil squad for the World Cup next year. And I think, I have a feeling he's going to get possibly 30-plus goals.
OK, Mick?
I was going to say Pedro, in that I just think that he is, I think he stood out a mile for Brighton and almost was too good for the way they were playing, and I just think that he's one of those ones that could just click in an incredible way. I'll change it, though, because I did have another one I was thinking of, and I think it happened so early in the transfer window that nobody's really talking about it, but I think Zubimendi is transformative for Arsenal and could be exactly what they need. I think he frees up Rice. I think he brings in, I just think he makes that entire team better, and if Jorkrez turns out to be a success, then we have to start seriously talking about Arsenal again in a way that like we haven't since, I don't know, the middle of last season.
Jokic is his second favourite to be top scorer this season.
I'm less convinced about him though, you see.
Yeah, so am I.
So I don't know.
I'm wondering why he's already been a starter.
You know what I mean? But I think actually you shouldn't do, it's almost like we're thinking of what did Arsenal do? Oh, well, they solved their striker problem. But I think that remains to be seen. But what they actually did was get probably the most, attractive available midfielder back and have improved the midfield significantly with a very exciting player, I think. Well, it depends, I suppose, what way you want to watch football as to whether you decide him as exciting or not. But like Liverpool tried to break the bank from last year, you know, and there was a reason for that. And Liverpool ended up not spending any money last season. And he was the one that they were trying to get, you know. So I think this could be, I probably would have it as my second choice. I think João Pedro was the one that kind of stuck out for me.
That was my reflex as well. Pedro and Jokeres is where I went after that. Okay. Just, I kind of, if you're predicting it at this point, I think he's either going to be the best signing or else he's going to be fourth choice behind Jesus, Havertz and Marino within about 4 months.
Can I make a quick point?
I was going to add just to Nate for Verts. Like for Liverpool, the one that really excites me is Frimpong, because when you look at the season that Bayer Leverkusen won the Bundesliga, got 9 goals and 9 assists in 31 games. Like that's incredible. A lot of those came as a right wing back, and you're kind of going, well, he's going to be playing as part of a flat back four. He may not get, but like it did seem from looking at the Community Shield game, and I know it's only a little kind of a glance as to what they might do, but we all know that Slot likes his players running in vertical lines. He likes his fullbacks to get forward to attack. We saw with Conor Bradley last season when he came in under Slot. He likes them to get into the box, that kind of thing. So I think Frimpong could be actually the most exciting of the players Liverpool have signed.
Go on.
I just think he's replacing the irreplaceable.
That's it, yeah.
And I think actually Frimpong could have a good season and Liverpool not have a successful season, in that I think he could get 5 or 6 goals and plenty of assists. But actually the struggle that they have in adapting to not having Alexander-Arnold's range of passing could be potentially part of that problem with the complete transformation of what they're trying to do tactically and personnel-wise. And he looks like a really good right back. I just don't know if he can have the same impact on the biggest games. My other name, just one to throw in, and I think his signing might be the most important for this team's hopes of success for the season, is João Palhinha at Tottenham. Because you look at what they're trying to do and what they might do in the transfer market over the next while, and obviously the injuries to Kulusevski and to Maddison are going to hamper them. But if they get in if they sign Savinho, they're going to have a lot of really good attacking talent, but they've no midfielders and they haven't had midfield for a hell of a long time, aside from spurts where Sarr has looked good and Bissouma has looked good. Palhinha could hold the whole thing together by himself and allow Frank, with a really good defence, to let that attack line flourish.
And maybe Tottenham will come up in our next category, which is surprise package. Just one other transfer that came to mind and kind of leads us into surprise package as well, is that I like the look of Anthony Elanga in this Newcastle attack. I just think the pace that they have up front between himself and Barnes and Anthony Gordon might actually lead to Newcastle doing a lot better than some people expect this season. I would assume most people are predicting that they're not going to finish anywhere near the top five once Isak leaves. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to be the case. I'm not sure how much you can put down, you know, a Newcastle qualifying for the Champions League as a surprise package outcome. But if you'll give me that, that's what I'll go for.
All the same position, though, Owen. And, like, they're trying to buy Jacob Ramsey now as well. Like, you know, and it's just like...
Well, like, is Gordon going to have his number nine moment this season? Is he potentially going to lead that line? Is he going to be the man who stands over the penalties? I'm not saying he's going to be Isak level, but it's why it's called surprise package.
That needs to be your wild prediction, that Anthony Gordon is Isak level. Anthony Gordon will probably leave before the end of the transfer window as well.
I think there's going to be what'll seem like a papering over the cracks front line that Newcastle send out in these first few weeks, and it might just work, is my very tepid take on Newcastle. Nathan, your surprise package.
What is a surprise package was what I was asking. Are we looking for an individual or a team?
Well, I went for a player first, but then actually, no.
You jump in then and I'll take your lead.
Well, I'll give you the player quickly. I think this French left back that Bournemouth have signed, Adrien Truffert, 16.5 million euro from Rennes. He's only 23, former France under 21 international. He's been regarded as the best left back in Ligue 1 for the last couple of seasons. He's got tremendous pace. He's very strong, good tackler. His crossing is sublime, and a really good finisher as well when he gets chances in the box. So to fill that very big Milos Kerkez hole that has been left in that Bournemouth defence. I think this guy is going to be really, really impressive for Bournemouth. Adrian Truffert, there's questions over them, obviously, with the amount of players they've had to replace, especially three quarters of last year's back four. Team-wise, though, I'm going for Everton. I think Everton...
Well, give us a place in the table.
I think Everton could possibly crack the top six, but definitely I could see them finishing as high as seventh.
Where would Everton have finished if it was just the Moyes era last season? Mid-table?
They finished, 13th today? 14th maybe?
So they're probably top half. So like Everton to be a surprise package, like it has to be top six, because I think we're all expecting Everton to be way better than they were last season.
Well, I've looked through most of their predictions in magazines, newspapers, all that. They've all got Everton in around 13th, 14th.
Right.
So they've got one of the best keepers in the league. Pickford, 12 clean sheets last season, only one less than the two top keepers. And he's consistent every year. Like, he's never had a bad season, really, for Everton. They've signed really well. This guy, Asnew, from Bayern Munich, coming in to back up or even compete with Mikulenko for that left-back position. I think Kieran Dewsbury-Hall is a doozy of a signing. Oh, my God. He's 26. Like, he's coming into the best years of his career. He's got pace. He's a proper Moyes player, isn't he? Like, he's just absolutely made for a David Moyes team. And I think with him, he's going to replace the legs that they lose with Abdullah Doucouré leaving. And he's just that kind of, he's a classic Moyes player. I think he'll get to the box, he'll have shots, he'll score. Bringing Grealish in, we all know Grealish wants to play at the World Cup next year. It's probably going to be his last chance to play at a World Cup. He's turning 30 next month. I think the sign of player who's, his career, while he did win a lot of trophies at Man City and did really well, his career wasn't really great, was it there? Because he was being asked to do a particular role which didn't really go. It kind of went against the grain for him. He didn't enjoy being stuck out on the left-hand side and trying to, keep the ball up in the opposition third for other attacking players to come into the game. And I think Moyes is going to say to him, Jack, you go out there and do your stuff.
Yeah.
He's going to want the creative Jack Grealish. He's going to want the maverick Jack Grealish.
Do you know what's great? That you feel like that's what David Moyes is just going to say to him.
Yeah.
Go out there and do your stuff.
Yeah. This is it, though,
Be Jack Grealish.
This guy, Barry, they brought in as well, the striker, I think is going to be...
good signing.
He's going to be... And then, Jake O'Brien, we haven't seen the best of yet. Charlie Alcaraz, he's obviously getting his first full season. Keeping Brantway, there's a lot of people sniffing around him, the bigger clubs sniffing around him. Dwight McNeil, enjoy up front. There's just so much going for this Everton team, and Moyes can qualify teams for Europe, we know that. I think the new stadium is going to definitely be a bonus for them. So, yeah, I'm predicting Everton to be a surprise package this season.
They are 10th on the 2025 calendar year table in the Premier League. Yeah. 9 points off top
place
Manchester
City. I'm not sure there's enough quality there to get top six. Like, there's teams will have disastrous seasons like they do every year at this stage, usually Spurs and United. But
who's your surprise package, Mick?
Palace. And I know that it's a little bit...
They won the cup.
Off the back of... Well, they always finish 12th, usually with about a 7-point window either side of them, a 7-point cushion either side of them. So I just think that they'll do... I just really like the look of the team. Now, there is a massive proviso that they don't sell half their players between now and the end of the transfer window, which could happen. You know, if Eze does go to Spurs, if Gueye does go to Liverpool, you wouldn't want to be losing too many of them. But I just think that they've just got a... they've got a very good manager. So if they do sell Gueye, I think they'll replace him in a way that it'll be... he's a kind of a spirit type of player anyway, isn't he? Like, and a leader type. He'll find another one of them. I just think that the shape of that team, the way they play, just it's a lot more from the FA Cup run than it is from the Community Shield, although they were brilliant on Sunday.
Yeah.
You just can't take that overly seriously. They haven't lost anything, though, is what Sunday showed us. And I think they're ready to kick on. And I think that, there will be a ceiling. I don't think it necessarily is Europe through the league or anything like that. But I think they're going to be a team that nobody is going to want to play next year. And I can't see them going on the type of, mid-season slump that just makes everybody forget about them and Palace be a non-factor for 4 months in the year, which is what seems to always happen to them. That, I think, will be the difference. I think they'll...
Sunday is going to be... a new thing, Conference League, I suppose, Chelsea can play a second string team maybe for some of those games.
But yeah.
Playing the Conference League could be a bit of...
I think that's going to be a big factor. My surprise package was almost on the other side. I think Forest are going to really struggle this season. I just think they had a a game plan last year that teams really struggled to deal with. They had a striker in Chris Wood who, I won't say did something that nobody expected because he's consistently scored goals. But
purple patch, though.
I'm really not sure he's going to continue that. I think teams now will be fully aware of how to handle their pace. Like, they've done brilliantly to keep hold of Morgan Gibbs-White. Yeah, they've lost Alanga. They still have Callum Hudson-Odoi there as well. But I think Nuno has a very set way of playing. And I think teams will figure that out. And the fact also that they have Europa League will be a little bit of a priority. I suspect the owner will want the Europa League to be a priority as well. He may get trigger happy very quickly if things don't start very well. But there's definitely an opportunity because the top six is very exciting. But that middle ranking group has become, as we say, like the squeezed middle class over the summer where it looks like they've loads of money, but they've nothing to do with it because they've all, like, and they were the best part at the end of last season when Liverpool were running away with the title. Brighton, you know, losing João Pedro. Estupiñán, who's been one of the best left-backs in the league, I know not quite as good over the last couple of years, he's gone. Bournemouth, insane what's happened with their defence, with, you know, goalkeeper, three to defenders, going to the biggest clubs in Europe. Brentford, absolutely decimated. Yeah. And they're the three teams you were so excited to see what they do next. Mm-hmm. And what impact is going to have on them? So, for a Fulham who've done really nothing,
it's actually been a gain.
It could be a gain. Palace, the next 2 weeks are crucial because if they keep Eze, looks like Gay's gone, but if they keep Eze and Wharton even, you'd feel relatively confident they could kick on. And then likewise, Everton look like they could kick on. So you wouldn't be surprised if those three leapfrogged the three successes of last season.
Well, then to take that on one more, I'll give you a surprise package of the three promoted teams not getting relegated. I'll pick maybe one of them not getting relegated. Is the expectation that the three that are coming up going down again? I'm trying to think of how exactly to frame this. Let's go with Sunderland to finish in the top 15. Is that surprise package enough? I mean, the net spend over the summer, they have spent so much money, and maybe it's going to be a disjointed squad, but Granit Xhaka to propel them up to
some semblance of you should have put that as your sign of the season.
Yeah, were you as mad about Xhaka when he was playing in the middle of the Arsenal midfield?
Oh, the last season, yeah. He's brilliant. I mean, Granit Xhaka propelled Arsenal to a title challenge the year before he left and then won the Bundesliga.
I had Sunderland on my list for surprise packages. I think they'll survive. I think that midfield they have with the French guy, Enzo Lefebvre, Granit Xhaka, looks like they're buying loads of experience as well.
Adingra. Brown.
Who, again, Adingra is one. Like, Brighton have had so many attacking players over the last couple of seasons. All of whom have, like, their sweet spot's been like 6 weeks. Basically, at Brighton, is you come on, it's like, wow, where'd this guy come from? And you're sort of gone again from the team. Mark Guy, who, yeah, looks at Chelsea from the little bits we saw, and obviously against Shamrock Rovers looked otherworldly. I think Sunderland, of the three of them, probably have the best chance of staying up. And it's just, I find it very difficult to pick a team of the 17 who are there, though, from last season, who are going to go down.
Rapid fire, first manager sacked.
Graham Potter.
Steve-O.
Daniel Farke.
Nuno.
Okay, no one's saying Keith Andrews. We'll take a quick break and we'll discuss Andrews next.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today.
You're welcome back. We are previewing the Premier League season through a list of categories. The last one was first manager to be sacked. Nathan said Graham Potter. Steve-O said Daniel Farke. And Mick, you said
Nuno Espirito Santo.
So they're all in the top six favourites to win the sack race. Nobody has said the number one favourite to get sacked first, which is Keith Andrews. I, like the three of you, don't want Keith Andrews to get sacked, and I want him to have an amazingly successful season, and we're all biased here, so I'm not going to say Keith Andrews. I'll just, for the sake of saying someone, I'll say Scott Parker. Why are we saying Keith Andrews isn't going to get sacked other than our obvious bias?
Well, it's also like, they've staked their reputation and appointed him, and it's like you have to give him some time, whereas I think someone like Daniel Farke or Nuno would have, you know, I won't say the word I was going to say about his owner, you know, they've seen what they have to see, and if things start going badly, they'll get rid. Whereas I think Brentford will hold fire a little bit.
We don't know in a way with Brentford, because we know they're run differently to other clubs, and we assume that will extend to making a decision like this, which was unexpected to give Keith Andrews the job. So therefore, they understand by selling Mbeumo, by selling their captain, by probably selling Vissa, that there's going to be we might just need to finish 16th this year and try and build from there. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it's like come November and you haven't won in 10 games and the pressure is massive. But I just think actually Brentford will probably be okay and get a few results here and there, and there's enough clubs around that Keith might be able to go about his business pretty quietly in England. Obviously not so much here, where we'll be talking about them all the time because of him and Collins and Kelleher. Whereas, again, look at this Sunday. If Manchester United lose, like, you know, Amorim becomes a massive story instantly, and that could become the story of the first 3 months of the year. I think across London, Graham Potter just hasn't felt right. It just hasn't, at the end of last season, never really got anything going with them. Yeah, they've got somebody like Jarrod Bowen who's clearly capable of elevating them to another level, but it feels as though that team has been coming to an end of a natural cycle. Antonio's gone, you know, Sufala's gone, Soucek's not making the same impact that he did. They feel quite predictable as well, and it doesn't look so far as if Potter has been given the opportunity to go and make the level of investment necessary, and I don't think the fans have taken to him. I don't necessarily feel he's taken to the club either, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was a nice mutual agreement come the middle
if
of October.
If Graham Potter doesn't make any impact and gets sacked first, as you say, like, is that his race run as a top level manager without having to go down to come back up? Because, like, it didn't work at Chelsea, incredibly short term. If he gets sacked first this season, then he's done absolutely nothing at West Ham. And the only place it's worked was at Brighton, where it worked before him and it worked after him. You know, like, where there was obviously a setup there. So I think the idea of Graham Potter dies with this job if it doesn't work.
I think he's failed to move with the times. You know, he's playing a kind of style of football that might have worked maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago. But, you know, the Premier League has become a lot more direct, pacey. You know, whereas he's very much, you know, geared towards playing possession football, but yet not having the players like a Pep Guardiola might have to play the kind of game that he wants to play. And with that squad that he has at West Ham, like, it's just, you know, you're kind of relying on the magic of Jarrod Bowen and Paquetá, who incredibly has stayed at West Ham this summer. So, yeah, I can see Potter going this season. I just don't think he'd be among... I don't think he'd be the first one to go. I think Farke is, like, you know, I think he's like, yeah. There was speculation over Daniel Farke before the championship season was almost, you know, they're already going to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Like the owner said that, you know, some of the quotes he came out with before actually confirmed that he's going to stay. We said, we're going to build the best squad we can with every penny that we're allowed to spend to go and compete in the Premier League. That was in May. And Farke just over a week ago was saying, the shorter time is to the first game, the more difficult it is to integrate my new players and make them fully ready and up to speed. And he's kind of complained about that he doesn't have the players. And at the end, he said, we're not anxious, but we're fully aware we need to do something. And he just doesn't seem to be getting the players that he wants. And like the first few fixtures, they have Everton, Arsenal, Newcastle, the first three games. They got Fulham, Wolves, Bournemouth, then it's on to Tottenham. They got, you know, so it's a really difficult start for Leeds United. I can see Ellen Road turning quickly. And I don't think the chairman is going to wait, you know, give him any extended amount of time.
Maddest prediction, Steve-O?
I've gone with Spurs to finish ahead of Arsenal.
Okay. Triggered, but okay.
Do you know what the thing about Arsenal is? Like, I was at their... We did their last home game last season, the 1-0 victory against Newcastle. It's a really bad vibe around the
end of
the stadium.
Because they hadn't won the Premier League. It was over for 2 months.
But, like, it was just a bad vibe. The supporters were starting to turn a little bit, you felt, against Mikel Arteta. And then every time they lost a big game, like the Paris Saint-Germain match games, and it was always this poor me attitude. Mikel Arteta was coming out, all the world's against us. You know,
he said we're the best team in the competition. It was the opposite of poor me. He said we're the best team in this competition. That was his line after the PSG game.
This is filtering down to the players now. The players are all coming out, this poor me, poor Arsenal.
What are they saying?
Everything's going against Declan Rice. Remember Declan Rice after the Paris Saint-Germain? And it's like, get a grip here, lads.
What did he say?
Well, I can't remember the exact quote where he was complaining about the world was against him.
But that was Arteta in the first half of last season, and then I think he kind of like copped onto himself.
But this is the thing here, right? Like, they're going on about buying forwards and all this kind of stuff. It's like, what was the thing that killed them last season? Was Paris Saint-Germain actually having midfielders that can get on the ball and play football? Arsenal don't have that. The only player they have that can do it is Odegaard. And he was absolutely brutal last season. And there's been speculation linking him with a move away. Now, if he goes, God help them, because, like, it's great bringing in Zubimendi. He's a defensive midfielder. You've got the running pair of Declan Rice. That's all great. But they don't have anybody creative in that team.
But they have Odegaard. Do you not need those three players? And that like, those three players is the perfect complement to each other. You have the driving runner. You have the sort of sitting player and you have the creative player, and that's a midfield three. Yeah, but it's like, not, like Odegaard was out of form.
This is the thing. Like, can he produce the kind of form that we know he has?
He had an injury at the start of the season, though, which can be a pain in the arse. I think he's got the, I don't think
I think it was the injury, but also Saka's injury, which you could put on Arteta that they'd such a set style of play that Saka's injury upset them too much, and that when Saka, Odegaard and Rice are together, it all works perfectly, and Zubimendi should enable that even further. But I think Odegaard, you'd have to say, the body of work is that he'll bounce back this season.
Oh, well, you would hope so. But the other thing is, right, and you bring me on to the other thing, is the muscle injuries. Like, this is, like, Jokier is going to be expected to run, he's going to be expected to press, he's going to, like, this is something that he's never been asked, well, I'm not saying never been asked to, but not to the extent that he's going to be asked to at Arsenal. How will his hamstrings hold up? How will Havertz's hamstrings hold up? Like, he's always bloody getting muscle injuries. Saka is so young, he's played so many games. I just think there's so many, this Arsenal team, and it's just the attitude that was creeping in over the last 6 months, and also this reliance on scoring from set pieces. Like, oh my God, I have a funny
feeling.
I hate
scoring goals.
I just have a funny, well, they can't bloody defend them either. I have a funny feeling Tottenham are going to do well this season. They might just creep ahead of our
season. The Spurs thing is, like, Spurs finished 17th last season. 17th in the table.
Lost 22 games.
They did win the Europa League. Yeah. Okay, grand. But, like, in fairness, to like look at their run through the Europa League.
Yeah.
Like, they got the worst of the worst in that competition. It was like they kept getting an easy draw all the way through, including in the final. Right, yeah. Where they played the other worst team in Europe.
You basically had a man who was like a kamikaze pilot managing the team.
I know.
You know, and it was like, we're going to go out there and play with the way I want to play, and I do not care if we lose, concede. Because he was almost like going two fingers to all the journalists. That's he had a point to prove against them. Thomas Frank is
feel like we're
be
picking the badge
pragmatic.
A little bit. There's a lot of work to do from a team that finished 17th in the league to getting them to finish above Arsenal, which you would suggest is top three. Arsenal aren't going to finish below fourth.
We'll come to that. But I do think Nathan's point about Paulinho coming in, like, this Paulinho fella is sensational. He's such a good player.
Yeah, but we're doing predictions, and you're sort of doing your predictions. Like, if Saka gets injured two games into the season, all of this is thrown out the window. And we are sort of looking at Tottenham going, right, Porro, Romero, Van de Ven, Spence, Udogi.
There's a reason all those players are getting injured all the time.
Part of that was probably Ange's style of playing so far up, whereas that's not necessarily the Thomas Frank way. So maybe they're not. But if they have the same injury problems as last season, and that was one of the dominating factors of last season, were injuries to clubs at certain times and the impact that it had on them. Do our predictions all have to make sense in regard to other predictions?
No.
Because I was going to say, because I'm thinking
first manager sacked, Potter. Who's the Champions League team? West Ham.
Exactly. Because part of I was going to go, actually, I saw something online, and I was like, actually, that's the prediction. I can't nick it. I'm going to give credit to whoever put it up and not claim it as my own, was that Evangelos Marinakis will manage Nottingham Forest in a game.
Yeah, that's
the prediction you want to put out there. I was going to say Andoni Iraola is the Arsenal manager before the end of the season.
Well, I was thinking,
but I might also predict Arsenal to win the league.
But Arsenal to win the league with under a manager not called Mikel Arteta,
the new manager. Yeah, that's a quick turnaround. Because they have to fall so badly for Arteta to get sacked.
I think Steve was on to something with the atmosphere. Which, look, it's not what it was near the end of the Wenger era, which was very toxic and almost infighting in the crowd. But of those league contending managers, there's no question he is under the most pressure at the start of the season, particularly now they've done all the things they needed to do. My other prediction is that Noni Madueke will be involved in a fist fight with one of his teammates over the course of the season, because Cole Palmer was that close last year to thumping him. The amount of times he managed to get in down the wing, and all he got to do is pull it back to Cole for a nice little side for the finish, and he was greedy and selfish, and I'm not sure the Arsenal squad will
be over
with
a
that.
Penalty. So Saka or Odegaard versus Madueke.
Did you see Arsenal's fixtures? Sorry, the first six, right? They got United away, Leeds home, Liverpool away, Forest, Man City home, Newcastle away. Like,
it's a tough
two
minutes
to start off with, though.
Like, now we haven't factored in the fact that the atmosphere is going to be better because of a lack of a tunnel at the Emirates this season as well. Yeah, so it'll be more hourly pleasing experience for the players before they step onto the pitch. Mick, surprise pack. Oh, no, sorry. Outrageous take, whatever we call this.
I don't know, but I don't have one really.
Ridiculous prediction.
Manchester
prediction.
United to get relegated.
Like, see, it's actually quite.
That's not mad.
So, like,
I just don't think that will happen.
What
so
Manchester United prediction even is bordering on mad, because it could be anything. Like, it's
my thing is that. So I look at the signings that they've made, and I think they're positive, and they seem like good signings. They're all in the wrong place. Like, as in, it doesn't feel to me like that they've addressed the issues that made them so bad last year. And also, I just didn't see anything in the, whatever it was, 8 months that we had watching Amorim to suggest that he is getting a grip on that team and making them any better. And there's always the wait until next season, wait until he buys an entirely new team, because he's the only manager in history that can't be judged until he buys in every single player on his team, can't work with what he has. So look, and it's not even to be like overly negative about him. I like, if it works out, fine. Like, you know, there are signs there that, you know, maybe the fact that they're still spending money to me is just absolutely crazy. I don't understand it. But I've seen no evidence to suggest that Manchester United are going to get any better. So I don't think they'll get relegated. I'll throw it out as a
mad prediction. What's a successful season for Manchester United?
But like, given the amount of money they've spent.
Well, that's what I mean. Because Champions League. I think Amorim could point and go, 7th or 8th is a massive step up. And last year they finished on 42 points. If they get to 60 points,
yeah, but that's a massive bullshit improvement. Though, isn't it?
But again, it was a... I don't want to say it was a false low because they were that poor, but we all sort of believed United could never fall out of top 8, top 10 because of the sheer amount of money that they spent. And now they've spent it, and you know, the sort of, oh, look at Sesko, he signed for us instead of Newcastle, shows how great a club we are. It's like, you know, you're beyond comparing yourself to Newcastle.
Yeah.
I just find Cunha and Mbeumo two really good signings. Mm. Obviously two of the better players that were available to them, because again, they're not operating at the level of the top teams in terms of who would join Manchester United at the moment. And the one thing I liked about both of them is the strikers that they played with both scored loads of goals last season. So Strand Larsson was able to score lots of goals. Vissa was able to score lots of goals. The only question I have, and maybe this is a good complaint, because you've got Fernandes, you've got Cunha, you've got Mbeumo, all want the ball. They all want the team to be built around them. They're all happy to do a lot of running to get possession. Does it work with the three of them all wanting to be the main man at the same time?
Did you see the headline earlier on from Sport in Spain? Barcelona are hurt by Šeško's move to Manchester United because Deco and the club had targeted him as the Lewandowski succession plan. So it's not Newcastle United that are necessarily the ones you're comparing him to. It's actually Barcelona. So maybe that's the optimistic outlook on Šeško and Manchester United. Just one mad prediction I would say. I was looking at the Hopometer that The Athletic did. So they interviewed or surveyed a load of Premier League fans. Who's the most optimistic? Who's the most pessimistic? The most optimistic fans, with a 98% optimism rate, is Chelsea. 2% pessimism. So as a result of that, I'm just going to say Chelsea are going to be the ones who have their season torpedoed by something, and they pull a Tottenham or Manchester United this season.
It doesn't need that much. Like, they're, you know, there's massive question marks about their goalkeeper, about defensively, as to, you know, what is their best defence. Like, Cucurella thinks their best defender and maybe the best left back in the league right now. Mm. But, you know, is Reece James going to be able to stay fit for more than 5 or 6 games in a row? Like, Maresca is not going to be far off most people's list for potentially first gone as well, considering the amount of money they've invested.
There's loads of options everywhere, though. If they get injury crisis, they're okay. If they get players out of form or not developing, they're okay. You know, it's just, and there's a few of those players. I was thinking of Chelsea as title contenders. There's a few of those players that are bedded in now. Like, Casado's going into his, what, third season. Fernandes is going into his fourth. You know what I mean? All those things. There's a lot, even though it's still chaos and they're still buying like 10 players, the main guy is the big guy from every window. They're there a bit longer now. The manager's gone into a second season. I think Chelsea could be real dangerous.
The sort of debate between Liverpool and Chelsea fans, that, you know, where Liverpool supporters are pointing at their midfield going, ha ha, we dodged the bullet bit by bit, even though they were winning the league, was like, oh, these two guys are bloody good.
Two of them together now, like, yeah.
Top five in order, Steve-O.
Okay, I'm going for Liverpool to win the league, mm-hmm. Manchester City second, Chelsea third, mm-hmm. Tottenham fourth, Arsenal 50.
Yes, Champions League football next season for Arsenal. Mick? Or Nathan, whoever is ready.
I'm going to go Chelsea, City, Liverpool. No, sorry.
Chelsea to win the Premier League.
Chelsea, City, Arsenal, Liverpool. And then it's another for fifth.
I'm going to go Liverpool to win the Premier League, retain their title. Manchester City in second. Arsenal in third. I said this thing about Chelsea getting torpedoed. I've got Chelsea in fourth and Villa in fifth.
I don't mean to have Villa. I wanted to pick Villa at fifth, but I didn't want to go for it. I feel like there's a Villa not selling is actually way more important than them not buying. And I think that actually, I think there will be a couple of people will come in before the end of the window. But actually, Emery kind of like actually it not having to reinvent the team again with such a good manager will help.
And that guy,
I didn't want to have Liverpool fourth. That was a snap decision. I have Liverpool higher now. I don't think they'll win the league though. I think there's too much change, and that's probably where I'm going with it. I'm taking Chelsea to win the league. Liverpool will be fine. They'll be up there.
I'm going for Liverpool to win the league. I think actually you're right on the change, but it couldn't have been a better summer for change because everybody is changing, and that might suit them. I think Arsenal will run them very close. Chelsea third, Manchester City fourth. Oh. Just, like, it's going to be foolish, and City will win the league by 15 points. And we're like, oh, how did we not see this? He's managed to rebuild the entire team in January, and we just sort of missed that Kucherov is the best centre half and better than Ruben Dias. And Omar Marmoush is scoring 25 goals to go with Haaland's 35 goals and all that sort of stuff.
Nuri with 26 assists.
I just feel like it feels like it's falling flat at City. And I think there's too many question marks about their signings. Is Rodri going to be a factor across the season? I'm not sure. And
I think Tottenham will finish 15 charges at some point as well.
Well, exactly.
Steve-O, bottom three.
Oh, bottom three. Well, Burnley, Leeds, Sunderland.
I'm going to go Wolves, Leeds, Burnley.
I kind of think Wolves are going to be okay. I'm going to pick the three promoted sides like Steve-O did because I just think you'd be foolish not to. I really hope it doesn't happen for three seasons in a row. I really hope it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Leeds, Burnley. Tempted to go double down on my Graham Potter West Ham, but I think West Ham will always sack and spend and do enough. So, Bournemouth.
Bournemouth. Ooh. There's your surprise package.
Bournemouth. Well, Areola's going to be winning the league with Arsenal. So.
You didn't say all of these have to be clipped up in separate things. So that,
or not clipped up
together.
At all.
We're playing checkers. Nathan's playing chess here.
Yeah.
Lads, good luck on your ventures this year, Steve-O and Nathan, on, you know, between the Emirates and Old Trafford and all the other great Premier League grounds that you go to. Mick, thank you for coming into the head to the Premier League season. That is pretty much all for Thursday Night's Off the Ball. We'll be back right after these.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.